Hello and welcome to another episode of Radio War Nerd. The date today is January 28th, 2026, and this is episode 577. I am the co-host, Mark Ames, in the Arctic northwest of New York State. You're listening to Radio War Nerd. Subscribe, please, and support the show. Go to patreon.com/Radio War Nerd. I'm on the line with the Warner, John Dolan, a.k.a. Gary Brecher, who just had more root canal work done. How's your mouth? How's your teeth? How's your jaw?
They're all pretty bad. They're all sort of crumbling like, you know, Sumerian concrete after a couple of millennia. And the cheerful news is that the tooth they dug out had four roots, and I saw them in the X-ray, and they're really highway 680 size roots, you know, like full on freeway,
yeah, multi lane each direction.
Yep.
Yeah,
and it just seemed like many years of this dentist going through the ritual. He was very good, but he just went through the ritual of one weird sort of dune probe after another being inserted in my mouth and in the same sequence time after time. And then the bad pop music. It's always Billy Joel in dentist's office for some reason.
Play me a song on the piano.
Yeah, that guy has self-pity issues, and I'm sitting there with open wider.
Yeah, didn't he marry Christie Brinkley? It was like
it's so sad.
Illustrated model or something. Yeah. Poor guy. Let me leave you a dollar tip on your piano, you asshole. Yeah. So it's going with the dune thing. Did your dentist say, "Your roots love to me"? Or
no, I think it's more like
I had to.
He put a big muzzle on me so my breath wouldn't get to him. But,
okay. All right. Well, let's get to more serious stuff. We are really lucky to have with us longtime listener, subscriber. We've actually been in touch in the past. Andrew Hart, who is a lawyer out in Minneapolis, St. Paul. He's from Minnesota, and he wrote a really interesting letter to us, you know, because of what's going on there with the Trump administration basically deliberately terrorizing the place and murdering some of its citizens. So Andrew, we got in touch with Andrew, and he agreed to come on for a sort of short bonus episode to kind of give us a sense of what it is like right now from his vantage point in Minnesota as a citizen, as somebody, you know, who knows the place pretty well. So first of all, Andrew, thanks for coming on the show and taking some time out today to talk to us.
Hey, thanks very much for having me. I appreciate it.
I think basically, first of all, if you could describe what it has felt like since the kind of clampdown, the ICE Border Patrol clampdown started, like what have you noticed? Are people as angry as they are terrified, or are they not terrified? Like, what's the general sense, and what are you actually seeing there?
Yeah. Well, something that's I think is pretty interesting, and you might not note from like the outside, because it seems like if you're watching the news, it seems like there's probably, you know, like cars on every corner and agents in every restaurant and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. The occupation is pretty sparse. I mean, I think there's still probably 2,500 or so agents from ICE mostly at this point in the state. But, you know, this is actually, like, Minneapolis is one of the it's like the 15th or so biggest metro area in the country. I mean, people think of Minneapolis as, like, a small little rinky-dink place maybe, but, like, we have all four major sports teams, WNBA and MLS, population of almost 4 million, and, you know,
four
it's like
million
a major,
in the greater metropolitan area?
Correct. It's like 3.7 or something.
Yeah.
So it's, like, it's a big city.
So St. Paul is like a smaller city across the river or something?
Yeah. So Minneapolis is on the left, St. Paul is on the right. The river's between them. Minneapolis is probably 2-1 over St. Paul. It's, you know, maybe about 400 to 200,000, something like that.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And I live basically in the corridor right between them on the St. Paul side, just, you know, just west basically of downtown St. Paul. So
yeah, because one of the things you pointed out in your note to us, your letter to us, is that you can be in many parts of the Twin Cities and not run into it, and then you can be in some other parts and it's right in front of your face. Can you describe that?
Right. Well, and I should say too, like I'm providing just sort of like a, you know, man on the ground kind of
yes.
summary here. I'm not involved in any sort of like top level organizing or anything like that, although I have mm-hmm. a lot of respect for the courage of people who are doing that. But yeah, I mean, I've talked to a fair number of people here. I have family and friends who live in some of the areas, even in South Minneapolis, that seem to be the most heavily patrolled. And not everyone has seen actions going on. Not everyone has seen, you know, you see like SUVs with tinted windows and out-of-state license plates, and you might assume, you know, that those are going to be federal agents, but it's just, you just don't know. So mm-hmm. that I would say that there's like a sense of foreboding and unease.
So how much of this still involves the Somali immigrant community? Trump was mm-hmm. boosting it as the terror of the Somalis. They're eating the cats, they're eating the dogs. Right. But I don't get the sense that Somalis are the target in the videos I've seen.
Their problem is like, you know, there's no, as far as I know, there's no U.S.-Somalia land border. So there's not a lot of like, you know, people who are in this country unlawfully from Somalia. Most people who are here from Somalia, you know, are citizens or have some kind of permanent resident status. And that's true of the Hmong population, too, which is another, you know, large immigrant population, sort of unique immigrant population in the Twin Cities. So mostly they've been going after Mexicans, Guatemalans, Hispanic people. There was, I don't know if you saw that video, it was before the killings. There was a video of a man who looked very scared at a gas station, and they broke his car window and they dragged him out and they sat on
him. I also saw a video of a very scared elderly Hmong man.
Yeah.
Who was dragged out of his house.
Yeah, and that was also just a case of like, you know, best case scenario, mistaken identity, worst case scenario, they just didn't give a shit, you know?
And I saw that they tried barging into the Ecuadorian consulate,
right.
Thinking, you know, they're speaking Spanish, let's go in here. And they're illegals. I mean,
it's just a complete clusterfuck. But yeah, I mean, the guy who got cut out of his car and sat on and, you know, passed out and everything and, you know, was unconscious and they dragged him into the car, that was just down the street from me. The Hmong guy who was pulled out of his house, that was probably just east. Most Hmong people live sort of east of the capital in St. Paul. So, I mean, both those places are like, you know, in nicer weather within walking distance from here, maybe, you know, less than 2 miles. And that's kind of one of the eerie things about this occupation is that you see these videos of places you've been, places you know. I mean, the places that the two people were killed are like, those are places people go. I mean, it's not like in the middle of some neighborhood that nobody goes to. Those are like,
right.
Especially the Preddy killing was like, it's on this place called Eat Street on Nicollet Avenue, which is like, there's a lot of restaurants there. It's a place that I probably go once or twice a month, just sort of organically. So
it's like the street that has all these really good restaurants and different ethnic.
Yeah,
and we have one of those streets here too.
Yeah. But in that way, there seems to be like a demographically targeted population for this. Like, let's get the younger professionals who go out to eat ethnic food once or twice a week because they're not voting for us anyway. Mm-hmm. And there's a tremendous vague rage in the imagined heartlands of America against that population.
Mm-hmm. I think that could certainly be part of it. I mean, you know, the two people who were slain are both in my high school graduating class, 2006. They're both white people who have similar politics to me. I mean, I definitely feel that. I know that, like, my friends, you know, who are mostly people my age, they feel that too. I mean, it brings it home when it's like they're out there killing, you know, it's open warfare on people like me.
Yes,
you don't, you don't always feel that. So, you know, and I think the other thing is it's like both of them were killed doing things that you could just see yourself doing in those situations, especially Alex Preti. I mean, you know, he was, I don't want to say that like Rene Good was like not, you know, doing something, it was doing something bad or whatever, but it's like with Alex, he spontaneously reacted to a situation in which someone was in trouble and, you know, reacted in a way that, you know, I think most of us hope we would, and ended up dead for it. And, you know,
they shot his corpse another five times in the back.
I know.
And it's amazing. But the Rene Good one was also weird too, because it was clear she was like trying to kind of de-escalate it by not showing fear or whatever. And she was like, come on, dude, I'm not trying to harass you. And she clearly was trying to find a way to get out of there. And that also really freaked me out too, because it's like, you can't get out of there without these freaks who are looking to kill and looking to terrorize. There was just no way out of that.
There are so many angles of this that are just grotesquely, satirically strange, like the gun that Peretti had, the fact that Trump's guys can carry a gun and fire that gun and kill several people against the Black Lives Matter protests. But that's cool, and it's not cool when he's doing this. And his whole almost excessive virtue as a human being, like he's tall and Lincoln-esque and thin, and he's an emergency room nurse, and he devotes his life, even in the last moments of his life, to trying to help people.
Yeah. For my part, like, the thing that is has gripped me the most about not just the ICE agents and not just the killings here and not just this occupation, but just sort of this political movement, is that its insistence that, like, fear is a virtue. That actually, you know, being scared isn't just contempt. You know, like in most societies or whatever, being a coward, being afraid is like a contemptible trait. But with these people, it's like, and you see this especially with, you know, the standard by which these agents and police and everything are judged. It's like, I was afraid and I did the best possible thing, which was to take out my gun and blow them away. And, you know, it's just, it's the same thing as, you know, oh, I was afraid of the bathroom people. I was afraid of the Somalis. I was afraid of a daycare. I was afraid of, you know, whatever it is. And it's like, I was talking to some of my neighbors the other day who just like out on the street corner when we were just, you know, getting together to have a little vigil to remember and to tell ICE to get the fuck out of here. I'm not afraid of this place. Like, I live here, you know? And, like, people patrolling this area like it's a war zone because there's, like, one Guatemalan man at a gas station or something. It's like, that does not correspond to my experience of this place. And, it, you know, it's like, people live here. People go about their daily lives here. And, like, people who live here are not, like, you know, seeing one Somali person and being like, oh, my God, you know, I'm afraid
now. I need help,
That is so far from the experience of the average person here that it's very incongruous to see it being treated that way.
So is there fear of Trump's, you know, goon squads, the border agents, the ICE, because they are killing people and dragging people? Or has it made people more sort of angry and get the fuck out? Like, how has it affected the mood there? Because, first of all, Minneapolis is known, and this is my own personal experience from years ago, but it's known for having really nice people, you know, and...
Minnesota nice is a common expression.
Well, you know, I certainly think that people have a more sobered look at encounters with these people, with the agents, because, you know, we've seen what they're capable of and what they'll do. So in that regard, I'm not rushing out to try to confront anybody, you know, armed agents of the state or whatever, because I think that part of what their goal is to, like, escalate situations so that they can carry out their violent fantasies on people.
Yeah, they're looking for people to provoke them so they have right. an excuse to shoot him. And then when they're not provoking him enough, they're shooting him anyway.
And I think, you know, even if they're not doing that, it's whatever they're doing is functionally equivalent to that. So I don't necessarily want to ascribe like personal motives to, you know, group dynamics, basically. Not like out of respect or anything, but just because like it's not always helpful. And you know, one thing I think is just like people act like it's the worst thing possible that is that these people are all like, you know, sort of depraved from the cradle. But I think the scarier possibility is that they're like fairly normal people who are like just responding to the incentive structure and becoming like that. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's scarier to think that they're just like fairly normal people who like put in this situation, just become like these, you know, taunting, cry bully, you know, villainous, perfidious killers, you know?
Although I think cry bully is a pretty good description, and yeah. I think it would fit a lot of them. I mean, I was sort of warped maybe by my experience of a pretty nasty public high school, but I think there's a lot of evil out there. Mm-hmm. A lot of people want to hurt others.
Yes, I agree. And ICE would, especially as they went on a mass recruiting drive, in general, anyway, they would attract more of them than even your average police department. But there is, you know, I have noticed, and we talked about this a little bit yesterday, Andrew, in our phone call, but the local police department chief, the Minneapolis police department chief, is not at all on board with the feds there. And I saw his press conference. I mean, he seemed very angry about what's going on. What is the relationship with the, like, sort of locals with Minneapolis police? Like, what's their sort of reputation there? And how are they reacting to all this?
Well, I think, you know, obviously there's been a fraught relationship between local communities and the Minneapolis police, you know, stemming to before the George Floyd killing. That was the Minneapolis Police Department. There was a man named Jamar Clark who was killed by Minneapolis police, I think, about a year before that. And then around the same time, there was a man named Philando Castile, and this was a national news story too, but he was killed by, I believe it was either Roseville or St. Paul police, sort of in an area just between the cities, just north of St. Paul. And so those are sort of three, you know, touchstone events in the sort of, you know, police civilian relations here. Mm-hmm. But Minneapolis police, I think, is known as, or has been known as, you know, a pretty militaristic and brutal police force. That said, I think that there is definitely a rift between ICE and Border Patrol and the police. And I think it's not just the fact that Minnesota is, you know, a sanctuary state, meaning that Minnesota doesn't enforce federal immigration law and Minneapolis police and St. Paul police don't. And, you know, I think that can be in some jurisdictions, you know, like that's a sort of civilian decision that the police don't really agree with, but they have to go along with. I don't know exactly how police feel about this here, but I do know that like the tenor of the rhetoric from the police departments has been like, basically, these people are not professional. They're causing a lot of problems, and they've even arrested some off-duty officers. I mean, arrested is the wrong word. Detained, you know, asked for their papers, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But it was a pretty extraordinary press conference by a lot of police chiefs where there, you know, there was someone in, I can't remember, it was Brooklyn Park or Brooklyn Center. Brooklyn Park was the one that Jesse Ventura was mayor of before he was the governor. So it's a pretty big suburb up just sort of northeast of Minneapolis. And they were saying that like multiple of their off-duty police officers, and of course only, you know, police officers who weren't white, had been detained by ICE and asked to show their papers. So, but I was at like a little, you know, street corner demonstration or whatever. I kind of made a point of whenever I see one to just stop and say hi to people and stuff. And a pretty remarkable thing happened, which was there was a St. Paul police officer pulled into like the left turn lane at this pretty big intersection and just sort of stood there, and he looked like he was getting emotional. And then everyone was kind of honking, you know, not because he was stopped, but just because like people were honking in, you know, agreement with our protest or whatever. Protests, yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then the police officer, when everyone kind of, when it was kind of a more quiet moment, he like got on his megaphone, said thank you to the protesters and just drove away.
Wow.
So I think there is a sense that maybe the police are closer to the community than they are to the federal agents. But, you know, I was telling Mark, I saw yesterday there was a video of protesters getting tear gas thrown at them. And it was definitely not only federal agents, but also local police and the local National Guard that were like on the side of the throwing the gas. So I don't know.
Against protesters who are protesting against ICE and Border Patrol.
Right.
So is this part of the deal? You think that because it seems like Trump and Governor Walz came to some kind of deal to either, I don't know, this might be a lull or to lower the temperature, as they say.
I think that right now the federal government might be taking the temperature of the situation and basically seeing like what's, you know, sort of regrouping and seeing what's tenable moving forward. You know, after the Preddy killing on Saturday and the day before that, you'll remember there was like a huge march that I was, I took part in, which was just walking from the NFL stadium to the NBA arena downtown. And there were probably
minus 30 degree weather and there was like 100,000 people out there. It was insane.
Yeah.
That's a notable thing about this whole enterprise. This has taken place during an extreme cold stretch in which it's been, today it's 6 degrees, but I mean, that's kind of balmy compared to where it's been last week. So Fahrenheit, obviously, for our international listeners. So I think with the, you know, possible deal, the protest shifted from the main protest actions over the last few days have been they found where people, where some of the agents have been staying, the hotels, and they've been having these very disruptive noise protests at night. And one thing that we've heard apparently is that they've now requisitioned from Hegseth space in Fort Snelling, which is like a historical site. I don't even know if they, you know, it's not like an active military base. So I don't know if they like what their accommodations are like. I play soccer over there because there's like a there's like a soccer field. It's like a park now, you know. It's
yeah,
like,
they've requisitioned a few log cabins. And,
yeah, that's what it sounds like.
That's
yeah.
what they basically look like. I mean, it's if you look at a picture of it, it was founded by Zebulon Pike, the namesake of Pike's Peak, in like, you know, 1815 or something like that, when he was the first person to sort of put down, first settler, obviously, to, you know, put down some kind of settlement in this area. And that's actually why there's Twin Cities, is because Fort Snelling took the prime real estate at the confluence of the Minnesota and Mississippi rivers. And the government has held that spot ever since, basically as a forward operating base for, you know, its campaign against the Dakota. And as a result, you know, there were two sort of prime sites, one upriver and one downriver, and Minneapolis is upriver and St. Paul's downriver. So that's why you have two cities.
I see.
I can't help getting back to the Somali angle, because Trump was pushing it so hard for the national audience, but it doesn't seem to have featured to the local audience. Or was it, as you said, that Somalis, since they can't immigrate across land borders, must usually have more secure legal status, and therefore they're invulnerable?
Isn't this also about going after Ilhan Omar, who is the villain, you know, certainly in the top three of villains for the right?
My assumption is that they got here, they realized it's kind of not productive for their purposes to go after Somalis, because like most Somalis are citizens or have permanent residency. And so they broadened their search to, you know, and they mostly found that like in Minneapolis, like pretty much everywhere, like the biggest population of like people who are here undocumented are from like Spanish speaking Central, North and South America. So I don't really think that any of it has to do with like the merits of like these sort of mostly bogus stories about like, you know, fraud and all that stuff. I mean, you saw that like the Nick Shirley guy or whatever is just like a complete idiot.
Total knucklehead. I swear to God, the right throws up exact people like Nicholas Shirley. If you've been following the right over the years, there's always a Nick Shirley, like the, you know, Steve Crowder. I mean, they just keep coming up every couple of years, a new Nick Shirley.
And they get used up really quickly because they always embarrass themselves. And then they're thrown away, and somebody else who's just as embarrassing has to pop up.
I mean, I feel kind of bad for him because he's so clearly out of his element. Like, you know, he's going to get eaten alive. But, you know, the way that, like, people who are on that, you know, even if you're like a sort of a regular Republican at this point, but like, especially if it's like, if you're like more like further down the rabbit hole, it's like the way you get your news is basically like putting a bunch of paint in a plastic bag and huffing it. You know, it's like you just go back to the same thing over and over, and it's like destroying your brain in the process.
Yes.
So they really do believe that, like, you know, quote unquote Somalian, which is, you know, that's like not the right way to say it. So if you ever hear someone say Somalian instead of Somali, that's like kind of a clue that like whatever's going to follow is probably like racist or something, you know. But, you know, that this fraud amounts to, you know, $9 billion or $15 billion or whatever. It's like there is basically no way that's true. And, you know, I don't think that like anything, I don't think that like the, you know, federal agents here on the ground are like coming to a realization that like their fraud story is falling apart or something, but there is not a lot to the underlying story. I mean, like the idea that somehow there is this massive daycare fraud going on, for instance, is like not, I don't think that's going to be borne out. I mean, you know, any kind of government program where the government pays private entities to provide services.
God, you know what that suddenly makes me think? It's like, if only ICE could be deployed in the counties of Northern Virginia where defense contractors are getting fat, really fat.
I was trying to think of a good analogy to, like, you know, help conservatives understand why, like, people who aren't maybe raving, like, leftists or whatever are you know, nevertheless, like, completely outraged about, you know, what's going on in Minneapolis. It's like, if you live here, you know? And it's like, imagine if you're, like, living in Scottsdale and, like, the Kamala Harris administration has just sent the $100 billion budget IRS federal agents in to enforce tax law, and they were cracking skulls, and they just killed two 68-year-old you know, country club members.
Yeah. Two golfers.
Like, imagine how mad you'd be in Scottsdale if that happened, you know?
Right when they were about to break par.
That's the tragedy of it all. Yeah. So, I mean, you know.
I was going to say, I mean, to me, I'm not there, so this is what it looks like from outside, from having watched these people for many years. It just looks like a targeted kind of terror campaign, because as we've been saying since Trump, well, since before he took office, but after he won, you know, this is a very energetic and vengeful Trump. Trump 2 is, it's not, it's, it doesn't have a lot in common with Trump 1. It's a lot more energetic and a lot more vengeful. And Minneapolis is where the big Black Lives Matter protest broke out in 2020. Which I know the Trump people to this day are still furious about that and think that's, you know, that humiliated him, his inability to gain control of all the, basically like the security services to stomp it. Has a big chip on their shoulder, grievance about that. It is, of course, where Ilhan Omar is, and they've been hating her like she's the devil for years.
Want to say Trump's reaction in that way was remarkable. Like, you know, it's typical of Trump too. He's not pretending anymore. He just said, I hate her anyway.
You mean his reaction to this weirdo's, the lone nut attack on her? Yeah. So he's not even pretending otherwise. Yeah. Well, probably he does that. I'm sure they do that to encourage lone nuts. And then, of course, Tim Walz, and we were talking about this yesterday. I hadn't really thought about it in this way, but you're absolutely right. I mean, to me, as somebody who is on the left, Walz is just, you know, there's just a massive disappointment, utterly feckless, you know, deer in the headlights, out of his element. But you're absolutely right. To the right, Walz is, they hate Walz. They hate him in that cry-bully way. Like, they hate him in the sense that they see somebody who is vulnerable and weak, and they really want to, that's like a red flag for them to attack. What do you think about the fact, because I think it's strange for a lot of people, why Minneapolis?
Well, I think that all the things that you said are true. And I think, you know, probably the root cause of this particular incursion is basically that they, you know, that they fixated on the Somali community here as, you know, like an allowable, like, internal
right,
enemy.
Right, as the cause, yeah.
Right, who could basically be, like, pilloried to take focus off of, you know, whatever, the Epstein files, whatever, yes. You know. I mean, it's I think it's kind of silly to say that anything that Trump does is a distraction from anything else, because he's got so many, like, you know, balls in the air that
yeah.
they're all just, you know, their
every
own little
day
independent
is,
things. Yeah.
His whole White House is a distraction. I mean, everything is a distraction from a distraction.
Just careening from one disaster yeah. to the next. But, you know, but I think that there's a lot of synergies with the fact that, you know, it's, you know, Tim Walz, and they really do hate him. I think, you know, we were talking, and there's like a particular, like, face that he makes when he's, like, mm-hmm. talking, and he kind of has that big mouth and, like, these sort yep. of expressive but, like, kind of timorous looking eyes. Mm-hmm. And there's
the big
a face
eyebrows,
that he,
the yep. the sad grandfather look.
Yep.
Yep. And there's just this face that he can get captured in, where he just looks like he's, like, completely out of his element, and he's, like, you know, just he doesn't know what he's doing, and he's just pushing through it. And you know, you've seen that look if you've ever seen any conservative outlet story on Tim Walz, because it's, you know, yep. some version of it is the headline of all those. Yep. And I think it's just the fact that that's how his face looks that, like, gets them, like, that's the visceral, like, yeah. nub of what they yeah. don't like about him, you know?
Yeah.
What about the mayor of, is it Minneapolis or St. Paul? The mayor seemed to be a lot fiercer.
The mayor-ass white boy?
Yeah.
He is sort of like a classic Democrat stuff suit. He looks like James Franco or something. He's got like the very, you know, he looks like John Ossoff too, a little bit, like the
senator
from down
in Georgia.
Gives me
also Josh Shapiro jives, vibes a little
yeah.
bit too. Yeah.
I sort of have a, you know, longstanding dislike of him from how he, handled the George Floyd protests, and mm-hmm. one of the funniest videos that a politician has ever been featured in is when he was giving the speech after the George Floyd protests, and everyone was just heckling him, and, you know, because he was trying to basically just bring everything back to, you know, where it was before without doing mm-hmm. anything, and he was forced to make this sad walk through a jeering crowd that someone with a wow. camera followed him the whole way. It's just as he's just, like, alone making this sad walk. You got to give him credit, though. He did go out there by himself and address the people, which not everyone would have done. So, I mean, he is a guy who will stand up sort of at least rhetorically and say, you know, he said fuck, and he, you know, he's been pretty fiery about standing up for Minneapolis, and you got to respect that on some level. But I think, you know, he's sort of like your classic, like, you know, guy who's like the mayor of the developers, you know, he's not, I don't think he's really going to do right. anything radical, you know?
But being occupied by outside military force will tend to, you know, clarify things and you yeah. either, you're either going to stand up more or you're going to be scared. And, we're not seeing a whole lot of people being scared out there, which is really impressive, I have to say.
The National Democratic Party, yeah. where'd they go? Are they still alive?
They had actually they had basically fixed the vote for this vote for more ICE funds, where the Speaker of the House, Jeffries, said he was going to vote against it. And they made sure basically that almost all Democrats, except for just a few enough mm-hmm. to make sure it passed, voted. Like, so Jeffries didn't whip any sort of discipline to make sure no Democrats voted for it. Seven broke ranks, which is perfect because that got the ICE funding through. And the truth is the Democrat leadership doesn't want to be known. They're afraid of being known as the people who held up ICE funding because they're always looking right, you know, always looking yep. right and yeah. punching left. That's just how it is.
Well, and I don't know if you saw, but there was a special election basically in my neighborhood for the state Senate last night. And it was, yes. It was a district that Kamala won by 70 points, and I think her name is Meg Lugar-Nicolai. the Democrat won by 95.6 to 4.4 or something like that. So
yeah,
putting up Gaddafi numbers in St. Paul today.
That's awesome.
But you know, I think that tells you. I mean, you know, the temperature for the, you know, like a liberal Democratic voter, which is definitely that district. It's not my district, mm-hmm. actually. I'm slightly carved out in a slightly different district, but the temperature for the average Democratic voter is like, you know, we want Nuremberg trials for these people. And, mm-hmm. you know, the average Democratic politician is like trying to figure out a way to get these, you know, historically anomalous funding bills through, acting like it's just like this is completely right. the way it's always been, you know?
Right.
Right.
That's the party for you. So you have, you know, Gregory Bovino, the wannabe Mussolini guy who's moved out. It looks like he was pretty much put out to pasture. My own theory is largely because he's just too much of a celebrity showboater, and you can't upstage Trump on the yeah. sort of like villain role. And so they just want to move him out. And it's not like Holman is anything like a, he's from cut from the same cloth. I mean, he was caught in some kind of, I don't know, corruption scheme. And I mean, he seems just as, just about as awful.
Yeah, it's like the same thing on an old 33 RPM, you know? It's
yes,
like,
yes.
It's going to be a lot slower.
Yeah.
But what happened to Trump's little minion, mm-hmm. who was the perfect minion, is that he was too perfect. It's like,
yes,
no, you're too Nazi. You're making me look Nazi. And as Machiavelli said, when you've used someone like that to be the driving point of the ram, and they've gotten used up and chipped, you get rid of them. You hang them in the public square.
Yeah, I was sort of mercifully unaware of who Bovino was before the CBP ICE incursion into Minnesota. So, you know, I saw his sort of prehistory just from his, you know, Wikipedia page or whatever, but he is kind of an interesting figure in the sense of, like, I don't really, it's kind of unclear why he was plucked out of obscurity in, like, El Centro or whatever to sort of become this, you know, trench coat wearing, I mean, it is funny how much he looks like the Sean Penn character from One Battle After Another.
I know.
He was definitely, like, a presence around town. I mean, there was, I don't know if you remember that, like, pretty early in the occupation here, there was that video of a Somali driver who was basically just sort of, like, lecturing the agents on the fact that they couldn't do anything to him. And then all of a sudden, like, in strides Bovino, in his little, you must be this tall to be the CBP commander presence yeah. or whatever. I think he did have this sort of like wraith-like presence around the city where it was just like, you know, and he was like, he had his like retinue of like bodyguards who were,
yes,
and retainers who were just yes. marching around with him all the time.
Like, well, I said, speaking of that, do you see on a daily basis ICE people with the masks and the flak vests? Anywhere around town?
I think if you're in certain areas of South Minneapolis, you probably see them pretty frequently. But mm-hmm. I've been, you know, I don't. And it's not like I'm just shut in either. I have some family members who live in South Minneapolis, but not in like the heavily patrolled areas. Or I don't even know if patrolled is the right word, but, you know, the areas of heavy action or whatever. And they've told me, you know, they haven't seen them or just, you know, have seen them driving around, but not like out on the street. So I think that is sort of what one of the weird things about it is this sparse occupation where, you know, you could see them. And, you know, I mean, if you're unlucky, I mean, it's not like mm-hmm. I'm not driving through Minneapolis streets or whatever. I just drove through a bunch of Minneapolis streets last night, didn't see anything. But, you know, you could just come around the corner and there could be, you know, 15 cars there and a bunch of guys with tear gas. You just don't know.
Right.
But it's a big metro area and I mean, look, we interviewed a guy who was in Tehran, and he said even during the protests and during the, you know, the government crackdown, like you could be walking on all sorts of areas in Tehran, which is a massive city, and not yeah. come across any of this. So that's, you know, but what I do think is so striking was your description of where a lot of this ICE action is taking place. And it's not, you know, it's not in the areas that people don't go or afraid of, or the super poor areas or something. It's in the parts of town that everybody knows, everybody from different classes and walks of life, like they all know. And that's what was kind of unusual about it, right?
Yeah, well, and I'm sure that they are in some of those other areas too. Right. I'm not, you know, like the man who ran away from ICE and was shot, the second person who was shot here, who wasn't killed, that was like in North Minneapolis, which is like sort of the historically black neighborhood, like low income neighborhood. If there's like a place in Minneapolis where people would be like afraid to go at night or whatever, like that would be North Minneapolis. I've been there many times, and it's not, you know, it, just like any kind of bad neighborhood or whatever. It's like, it's not as big of a deal as the people who are afraid of it make it out to be, right, obviously. But
if you haven't been there, you're afraid of it. If you've been there, it's like, oh, okay.
Right, exactly. Yeah. But, you know, it's one of those places where there, it's not like, it's not really a gentrifying neighborhood. So it's not like there's, you know, there wouldn't be like a sort of a buzzy restaurant up there that like white people would want to go to, you know,
right.
You don't, it's not like a place that you'd normally go just because there's really not stuff if you don't live there that you do there.
Yeah.
So, you know, but like you were saying, I mean, you know, the places, a lot of the places where there've been, and the, especially the places where the, you know, where Renee Good and Alex Preddy were killed are like, that's in the middle of like, the city where people go all the time.
Right.
So
my wife showed me a video.
Especially Preddy. Yeah.
I'm sorry. Yeah. My wife showed me a video yesterday of it was a Somali, you know, immigrant, whatever, citizen now, but you know, originally from Somalia, I'm pretty sure. And he made a video to show people how to protect themselves from ICE. And He had, with like big wide tape, taped his passport to his forehead, you know, wrapped it around with the passport facing outwards, you know, so that they know right away he's a U.S. citizen. He said, this will hopefully help you not get shot. So it was pretty funny. But anyways, listen, this has been, I really appreciate you taking the time. We've kept you on a while, but taking the time to sort of explain to us, you know, what it's like being there. And also just want to say, you know, solidarity to you guys out there too. I mean,
thank you.
Hopefully this ends as soon as possible.
Thank you. Well, I really appreciate the opportunity, you know, just to sort of give the, you know, average person's feeling on the ground from what things are like here. And, you know, we have a lot of pride in this place of just being from here. I was telling you, like, you know, people in Minnesota love to know who's from Minnesota, who lived in Minnesota, who passed through, who, what high school people went to and stuff like that. So,
yeah, there's this very interesting and kind of scary comedian named Maria Bamford, who's sort of really crazy and also playing with it in a fun way. And she makes a lot of her Minnesota background and Minnesota roots, and there's one typically Bamford routine about when she didn't get the lead in the play and the whole scenery fell on the one who did, and now that one is completely crippled. It's very weird, but she talks to her pugs, and she's all in all very wholesome and yet crazy in a very Minnesota way.
Yeah, that makes sense.
It's kind of like Fargo, also crazy.
Yeah, yeah. I was thinking they should do a Fargo version of Ice Comes to Town.
Yeah, that would be good. Andrew, I think, were you going to mention here, because you told me this last night and I hadn't even thought of it, that Pete Hegseth is a Minnesotan, or no?
Yeah, I was just saying, you know, Pete Hegseth, he had that tweet. He was the one who tweeted out ICE greater than MN.
Yes.
Which is just like, you know, he's from here. I mean, come on, man. Like, he makes a big deal about going to Vikings games and stuff like that. And it's just like, you know, that guy should be heckled out of the building if he tries to come to U.S.
Yeah.
Bank Stadium.
Yeah, traitor. Man, you know, treason to your hometown. That's bad.
Yeah.
All right. Anyways, thank you again so much, Andrew Hart, for coming on Radio Warnerd. And thanks, everybody, for supporting the show. Thanks, everyone. Talk to you soon. Bye.
Thanks. Bye.